This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is Oval. And Oval is your home for great storytelling and some opinions on all things, well, basketball, but also just stick and ball sports. We continue with Josh Lucas. This is our part two with the former director of player personnel with the Chicago Bears. And in part one, we talked about his kind of turbulent past as a kid growing up in Ohio. Took him to Harvard, where he played football, but for a very short period of time because his body kind of failed him. And he eventually found his way to Jacksonville and the NFL. That's kind of where we left off, and his story starts to take a little bit of a turn. But before we get to Josh, let's kind of recap some wild times in college basketball. In terms of the actual teams, right, think about the week we've had already. Now, you go back on the weekend with Purdue losing, and during the week, UConn gets not beaten, but blown out by Creighton, by Guy Cashworth, Splashworth, Stephen Ashworth. It's three after three, and the Blue Jays show themselves to be at least partially the team that so many of us expected them to be when the preseason rankings came out. And some of this is about, you know, styles make the fight, and you're at home and you're able to set the tempo and you're able to kind of play your game. Some of it is, hey, look, they got an older veteran team, and when they're starting hitting shots and they're playing their game. And some of it is UConn didn't play well, didn't react well to the adversity. And they've been playing at a magic level, right? It's hard for a college kid to get done beating, you know, Marquette, who they think they have to beat in order to win their league. And now you go to Creighton, who's been a little bit disappointing, and get up to that same level, especially if you're playing on the road. So there's a lot of college basketball stuff to get to, right? Purdue, UConn losing, both on the road, but losing. A lot of the turbulence with transfer portal and NIL, coaches speaking out about it, whether it's Rick Pitino talking about his team, which he's since apologized for. You kind of name it. You go through Mike Boynton talking about where Oklahoma State sits with NIL in the Big 12, and it's led to struggles in recruiting. Coaches kind of speaking out and calling out and pointing out that their teams might not be as good as advertised. Hasn't necessarily landed well with a lot of fans, but there's also very few, if any, lies that are told. And so maybe it's like a PR lesson. All right, we'll circle back. We'll get to that. So in college basketball, you got just some craziness with the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows, the wins, the losses. You have the coaches trying to figure out the new world order. And there's been varying degrees of success both throughout the season or as the season goes on. Younger teams are getting better. I mentioned Oklahoma State. They just beat Cincinnati for their first road win of the year. UCLA, although they lost to Utah at home, a blind man can see that Mick Cronin with his young crew, they're starting to figure it out. As opposed to a team like in Indiana, which has just been a complete thud. So you got all different types of teams, different types of spending in terms of NIL. You have some incredible stories. Let's first give a little respect to the Mountain West. Backing up San Diego State playing for a national championship, with the type of year they're having, where you could very, I don't want to say easily, but you could definitely see six teams getting into the NCAA tournament. That's true, six teams. Boise started out a little slow this year, but man, they've come on strong. Utah State's been the surprise of the league. We know what San Diego State brings to the table. They'll make the tournament. Where you see them, that's going to be hard. You got Colorado State, which, of course, started out with such a great start, then hit a lull, just lost to New Mexico in a great game. Speaking of New Mexico, you got New Mexico, and then you got Nevada. I mean, what an incredible league. And the other cool part about the league, so many of the games played in altitude makes road games even harder, but also amazing places to go to games. You know, Viejas is no longer new. It's 25 years old, but still really cool. The Pit, to me, is one of the iconic spots in all of college basketball. The D. Glenn Spectrum Events Center, just called the Spectrum to the folks in Logan at Utah State. Awesome place. And kind of finally getting its due with Stu Morrill getting his name on the court. You know, Boise State's not like special as an arena, but as a city, it's like the coolest city you'll never visit. And they're really good. Plus, I love watching Max Rice and Tyson Dagenhart go at it. They've been buddies forever. And Max Rice is like he's literally like a grown-up playing with kids. Not just in terms of his age and his experience, but just the way he carries himself, being a coach's son and being around it all this time. I tell you where Wyoming's arena, since it's been redone, is awesome. I love, you know, I know that they need to redo it, but Moby is really cool at Colorado State. I mean, they still have the hoops that come down from the ceiling, even on the sides, you know, bleacher seating. But they've done a lot with a little, and more than anything, like the arenas don't matter when they're full. They're full, they're loud, they're really, really cool. Who am I forgetting? Lawler, blah, 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 San Jose State, no. Fresno, God, that thing has just been a disaster since they went to the Save Mart Center. It's too big. And obviously they're not great, but it's just too big. But those top teams outside of Nevada, which in altitude, tough place to play, team that can really shoot, older team. But in terms of the actual venues, amazing. Amazing. And now you have the teams to kind of match the venues, and you got incredible crowd support. And I'm not sure if it's the success of San Diego State, the success of the league, the fact that the league, while it's on TV, it's on Fox Sports 1, it's on ESPN some, it's on CBS Sports Network, but it doesn't feel like TV has taken away from those markets the way it has some programs, you know, where every game being on TV kind of diminishes it. I don't know. They draw really well. It's a great league, and it's finally getting kind of its due. And, you know, I don't think it has a team that'll win a national championship, but it wouldn't stun me to see the Mountain West have a couple of teams in the second weekend, something that it struggled to do. But there's a discussion there to have six teams in. Probably get five, definitely get four. But, you know, Mike, go through the Pac-12 and try and find me even a second team. Like, Washington State's a great story, but even a second team that belongs in the field. So the Mountain West, to me, is probably the second most competitive conference at the top with NCAA tournament teams. Like, that's a lot. It's a big sentence, Doug. I get it. I mean, like, look, do I think those teams are as good as, frankly, you know, even though the ACC's down, like, Duke and North Carolina? No. And they don't have the budget to, but the rest of the ACC, what does the kid say? They're mid? Yeah, kind of mid. But then you have the Big 12, which is a gauntlet, although should be pointed out, feels like Oklahoma's taking on some water here. They got a week off, and they got a big one at Oklahoma State, a game they probably should have lost at home. And Oklahoma State's won, I think, three home games in a row, and now won a road game, feeling with some confidence. OU is the team, that one team that could slip on the bubble from the Big 12 if they're not careful. They had a very good non-conference. The problem is the teams that they beat in the non-conference, from Providence to Iowa to USC, haven't had particularly good years, so they don't look like as good of wins as they really were. Still, the top of that league, Houston, probably going to win the league, Kansas, Tech, Baylor, heck, BYU just popped Baylor. They can really shoot the basketball. Oh, holy cow, can they, when it's going in. TCU, and then, you know, you look at a team like Oklahoma and wondering whether or not they'll make the field. So kind of similar there in the – there was talk of 9 or 10. K-State's not getting in. West Virginia's not getting in. Oklahoma State's not getting in. Cincinnati, I don't believe, is getting in. But we're kind of working on – East Central Florida's not getting in. You know, then you got Texas sitting there. They'll get in, but how dangerous are they? And Texas's schedule, because of the expectations, because the name of Texas kind of backloaded, going to be difficult. I'm fascinated by the Big 12. To me, it goes Big 12 1, Mountain West 2. I did say Mountain West 2. And then, you know, you got the Big East at the top is very good. The Big Ten has one team kind of alone at the top, but then a second group, which is solid, fine. SEC, crazy talented. I mean, talent-wise, probably the best league, athletic talent. That's when they're beating up on each other. We just saw Kentucky lose to LSU. And then, you know, like, I love Tennessee. They've had some uneven performances, like losing to South Carolina at home. And then South Carolina's fought on hard times. You got Alabama. Man, can they really score? They win another game at home. SEC has a lot of talent, and some of it is because it's the richest conference, and they turn around and use that in NIL. It's kind of no secret there. And then, speaking of NIL, if you're listening to this, you're probably a basketball guy or basketball woman. You're all welcome. We got to have a legit discussion about what this offseason is going to look like, because when the district court judge struck down the NCAA's rule where you can't limit second transfers for players, it sent shockwaves in college basketball. Because now, if you can transfer a second time without penalty, when can't you transfer? And now, with all the numbers being thrown around, whether they're real or not, and you might ask yourself, well, how are these numbers not real? I'll tell you. Okay. They calculate, some schools will calculate the numbers. They almost all calculate cost of attendance, your Pell Grant, if you can qualify for one, Alston money, which is like, I think, $6,500 a year, 10 month, right? A year. And Alston money can be determined by each school, some form of academic achievement, whatever. And remarkably, all these guys get Alston money. You know, they're all eligible and they're all getting all some money. And then, you know, there's some shady stuff done with cars where people will calculate the value of the car that they'll give you to drive, but it's not your car to keep. I mean, look, you're driving a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 car, sometimes a little bit more than that. It's not your car, but that's all calculated into the value of the package they're putting forward, even if you're not keeping that car. So what guys actually make, I got no idea. But that's how it's kind of all put together. And now you start to wonder, okay, are we going to have a record-setting number of players in the portal because they can transfer and they all think they're going to get more money elsewhere? And maybe they are, or maybe they're not. We live in absolutely crazy times, And I do think the best thing you can do is hold on to your players. So it should be about retention. Can you build in these contracts retention bonuses? It's a great question. I don't know the answer to. And then let's discuss the Caitlin Clark. I don't have animus towards Jay Williams. I really don't. I know his ghostwriter for his book, and his book was a kind of a passion project of his for years. And I think he went through some writers, and he said some fairly unflattering things about me in the book. What's crazy about it is, like, I always had a good relationship with Jay Will. And even after the book, or when the book came out, you know, he sends me notes how badly he wants to work with me because we respect each other and we have no problem going back and forth on this. That said, he kind of stepped in it with the Caitlin Clark thing. And I actually agree with him if his premise was, Caitlin Clark's not the greatest of all time. But that's not what he said on the set of Game Day. On the set of Game Day, he said, I reserve great for people who win championships. Which is like straight out of the first take playbook, right? And there's no real playbook. Right? But you watch, you assimilate, you learn. He's a bright guy. He knows the drill, and he's been on those shows before. But he was also covering the NBA for a long time. And it's a little bit more of an NBA mantra. You know, if you're really one of the all-time greats, you got to win a title. College sports is so different. You know, it just is. I understand, like, if you stay 4 years and your team doesn't win, like, I think it's a legit discussion when Ben Simmons' team didn't make the NCAA tournament. That's a legit discussion. Like, are you really any good if you can't lead your team to the NCAA tournament? You're at LSU and you have a really good roster. Like, I think the answer is you clearly aren't a winning player and don't know at that point in time. On the other hand, you know, Ben Simmons was a freshman. He didn't know it. Like, freshmen don't know anything. But we've seen other freshmen come and figure it out. And Carmelo Anthony won a national championship. Had a lot of help, and played for a Hall of Fame coach. But nonetheless, we've seen guys contribute more. In terms of Caitlin Clark, like, we're not giving her a pass. Iowa's fine. They're a good team. You know, they've always been a 25-win team or 20 to 25-win team. They got to the national championship game. They beat a way more talented South Carolina team and lost to a ridiculously more talented LSU team. Like, LSU is an all-star team. And then they went out and added Haley Van Lith this year. So the first thing is, times have changed in that, especially in the women's game, even in college baseball. Like, LSU was so loaded last year in college baseball, nobody's beating them. They were so loaded last year in women's basketball, nobody's beating them. And the only thing that can beat them now is chemistry issues, complacency, et cetera. But is Caitlin Clark the greatest women's basketball player of all time? No, I'm okay not saying that, you know. But is she great by any metric? You know, the thing that was interesting was he talked about doing things that are iconic and, you know, are generational and will last. And I'm like, well, if you're the all-time scoring leader in women's basketball, like, isn't that a historic achievement? So I think where Jay Will made a mistake, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass here, is he was talking about greatest of all time, and he wanted to pump the brakes. If he was talking about just being a great player, an all-time great in women's college basketball, Caitlin Clark, I mean, this isn't the University of Detroit, where you have a guy play with 3-point shots and play a couple years longer than Pete Maravich and still not able to break the record and have to buy games in the CBI in order to do that. That's what happened last year. No, this is the woman who's in her fourth year in college basketball. Granted, she's been helped out by the 3-point shot, but so Kelsey Plum played during the 3-point era. And in season, like, she didn't even have to, in less games, she's the all-time scoring leader in women's college basketball. And she lead the country in assists. And they win. They went to the national championship game last year. So by any metric, she's great. Is she the greatest of all time? That's subjective. I'd probably agree. You know, with Breanna Stewart, she won 4 national titles, but she played with a loaded team. And I don't know. I'm old enough to remember Cheryl Miller, Pam Woodard, the other all-time greats. But I'm not necessarily a great judge because I haven't watched women's college basketball. I have watched recently because I like watching Caitlin Clark play. I like the way that team passes the ball. I love the fact that she's basically a chick version of Steph Curry, right? She's like Sabrina Ionescu captured some people's attention, but Caitlin Clark has captured everybody's attention. Why? Well, because she did it last year in the Final Four, which is something that great players do. So if he meant greatest of all time, he actually has a friendly place here for me to give him a pass. If he means just being great, you know, that's dumb. And nobody agrees with you. Let's get to Josh Lucas. Here's part two in All Ball.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're at Harvard. You graduate. What was next? What was the plan?
So when I finished school, I went through the normal rigors of investment banking interviews, consulting interviews, kind of the mainstream, what most Harvard kids do when they're done. And never in my life, Doug, have I felt more of an imposter, more of a fraud, putting on those suits, sitting through those interviews. I had zero interest in the banking world and in finance. My ambitions and goals were, were never, I'm going to be this super, financially successful person. And I think part of it was I was scared too. Could I handle this? The way I feel physically and mentally, could I go to New York City and really work as an investment banking analyst, the hours and the stress and the competition? And I looked for an easier, softer way. I really did. I thought maybe if I could get into sports, something that comes more natural to me, something I was more passionate about, it would be an easier fit for me. And so I spent just as much time sending resumes out to NFL football teams. I sent some stuff out to Major League Baseball teams and basketball teams as well. Football was really where I focused. And I was very fortunate to get a 6-week internship in Jacksonville with the Jacksonville Jaguars the summer that I graduated. No guarantees that it was going to turn into anything. Just 6 weeks, come down here. It's basically a football ops intern. And after that, you're done. And I had some buddies that lived in Jacksonville Beach. So I said, hey, I'll go down there for 6 weeks and then I'll just go, hang out with them until I figure out what's next. And I was very fortunate at the end of that 6 weeks, they asked me to stay for the entire season. And so I got to be a football ops intern for the entire season in Jacksonville. This is my first year out of college.
What year is this?
This is 2002, Tom Coughlin's last year in Jacksonville. I was the horn boy at practice. I stood next to Tom Coughlin and would blow the horn between each period, and you don't mess up the horn with Tom Coughlin. So I would walk around paranoid and scared to death for 2 hours every day, making sure I didn't mess up the horn.
Well, okay, so what were specific horn instructions? Was there a length of time that the horn was supposed to be pressed for?
Just a short, 1 second blow as soon as the period's over and you're moving to the next period. Can't be any simpler, hard to mess up, but every day, 2 hour practice, lots of periods. There's probably, I'd say, 2 to 3 times, during the year where I got the look and I got the stare and got a few choice words said to me. But for the most part, I think I handled it well.
What was he like? I know that was the end of that. And then he came back, obviously, with the Giants. And they had great success early on with the Jags, right? Going to the AFC Championship game. But he's always been seen as a disciplinarian. That was always like his MO. The weird part about it was, if I remember his last couple of years with the Giants, they're like the most penalized team in the league. So it's like, well, is he? What's he really like?
So just 1 year, obviously my first exposure to the NFL. So, you know, I don't know shit. I don't know anything what I'm seeing, if this is normal or not. He felt very military, very generalish, you know, not very approachable, was the way I always, you know, kind of sought it, you know, when I was around him, like, speak when spoken to, you know. There was coaches on that staff where I felt I could slide into their office and have a real conversation and shoot the shit. But obviously I wasn't ever going to do that with the head coach.
So then what?
So that was the entire, you know, my first year out of college, and that ended in around March. They fired the head coach. They fired the personnel people. They kind of kept me around to be the caddy, to drive everybody around and to make sure everyone got where they needed. And then they kind of let me know, okay, you're done. Your time's up.
What did you make that year in Jacksonville?
Oh, I got a free rental car and they paid me $500 a week. I remember that.
Yeah, but you had to be the lowest earner to come out of Harvard in 2002, like, right, you know, like, I think average salaries, yeah, like, was, oh man, like, let's cut out the highest and the lowest, let's cut out Lucas, because that guy, he's just killing us.
Yeah, I had a rental car because they needed me to drive all the players around, you know, to the physicals and to the workouts, I was staying basically for free on the beach with some friends, making $500 a week. I honestly thought I was rich. I thought I was killing it, and but then that ended, you know, that soon ended, and I was down on the beach doing the same deal. All 31 teams trying to get in, did not get in after the draft, you know, after that year. And Jacksonville was getting ready to host the first Super Bowl in the franchise's history, Super Bowl 39. It was Philadelphia and New England. And they were going to work on a project to help raise funds for the improvements that needed to be done to the stadium in order to host the Super Bowl. So part of this project was packaging Super Bowl tickets, hotel rooms, and parties, selling them to these companies and wealthy individuals. And the money they raised would help, you know, offset the cost to the capital improvements to the stadium. And they needed workers. And they asked me if I'd be interested in doing that. And they said, hey, it'll keep you in the building. You're not going to be doing anything with football. You're going to be managing hotel rooms and guest lists and party lists and doing ops work. And I said, hell yeah, you know, if it keeps me in the building, I'll do it. And so that's what I ended up doing for really the next year and a half. During that time, they let me intern during the summertime in the football in player personnel. So I got to meet some scouts, got to meet some people that are decision makers, and it helped bridge me to eventually my first full-time job. But yeah, those last 2 years in Jacksonville, it was nothing to do with football. It was all just
2 years. Yeah. You did 2 years of it.
Yeah, it was about a year and a half, you know, until they hosted that Super Bowl. And so you want to talk about not making a lot of money. That year and a half, you know, because I didn't have the car, I had to get an apartment, pay rent. So then that's when I was really feeling more squeezed. But honestly, I felt I was on the right track because I was still involved and I was close. And even though I was on the perimeter, I had some feeling that, hey, this is going to lead to a job at some point.
Okay, so how did you get – New Orleans was next, right?
So after that job, that Super Bowl got played, so that had been Super Bowl 39, and so obviously the games played in early February. We kind of wrapped up our duties in probably in March, and I just waited for the draft because I knew the hiring and firing season for scouts was after the draft. And after the draft, probably 2 or 3 weeks, same deal. Nothing. Like lots of phone calls, lots of maybes. I just wanted to be a scouting assistant and get in somewhere. And it came down, Doug, to like second, third week in May, where I was starting to call some of my Harvard connections to say, hey, maybe banking doesn't sound so bad, or maybe consulting might be a good idea for me. Because I knew at some point I had to like really start making money. I remember to this day sitting in my apartment, getting on Pro Football Talk and reading that the New Orleans Saints had just lost a bunch of scouts. They had left on their own. And the director of college scouting in New Orleans was a personnel director in Jacksonville when I was in Jacksonville for 3 years.
Ooh, what's his name?
His name's Rick Reiprich. And so I had at least one person I could call. I found out through a bunch of people that they were going to bring in a bunch of young guys to interview. They were going to hire a couple of scouting assistants and a couple of scouts. And I just remember, like, if I don't get this, this is it. Like, this is, I'm done. Like, I got to go find something else. And New Orleans flew me out, and they hired me as a scouting assistant in 2005. I moved to New Orleans in July of 2005, was there for 10 days, and Hurricane Katrina hit. So that was my welcome to New Orleans.
Welcome to New Orleans.
New Orleans experience.
So where were you?
So I was I evacuated with the team. We evacuated to out to San Jose, California, because we were playing our final preseason game against Oakland on a Thursday. So we evacuated out on Sunday or Monday before the storm hit. We spent a good week out in California. And then we relocated to San Antonio and spent the entire season out in San Antonio. And that was an experience, you know, practicing on high school baseball fields. Team was a mess, as you can imagine. You know, it was the final year of Coach Haslett and Aaron Brooks. There was a lot of talent, but you could just imagine like the dysfunction and how hard it is to keep a team together amidst relocating to a different city, like in the middle of the season, you know, during the season. We won our first game of the season at Carolina. And I remember thinking it was going to be this special magical year. And we finished 3-13.
What was Aaron Brooks better?
Just, you know, transitioning from Aaron to Drew Brees in consecutive years, commitment, putting in the time. Physically, he had all ability in the world. I was just there for 1 year, and it was a bad year. So it's probably not, you know, I'm probably not a great person to speak on it. And just from what I saw, it was just so loose. I just saw a lot of guys that were just kind of checked out, just to be honest with you. And I felt, you know, he kind of was on that side. So that's kind of all I saw of Aaron Brooks, you know, and he had some, you know, good years in the league and took that team to the playoffs. So,
yeah, that was like their first playoff appearance. Okay, so but when the coach gets fired, you got to be like, all right, am I going to go have to find another job?
I wasn't too concerned. I had felt that I had gotten, gotten to know all the guys really well in the personnel department. It was a young staff. Mickey Loomis, who's still the GM in New Orleans, was the GM. And as soon as I knew he was the person that was going to be hiring the next head coach, I felt okay as far as having some stability in New Orleans. I felt I had made a good impression that year. And, you know, throughout all this time, I knew I needed to ask for help. And that's the gist of the whole time I was at Harvard, the whole time I was in Jacksonville, the beginning of my New Orleans experience. I knew the way I felt on a day-to-day basis was not healthy and not allowing me to be my best. I was so terrified to ask somebody for help because I didn't want them to think I was defective. You know, I wanted to be known as the bright Harvard young scout that had this upward track, you know. And
so when you say you don't feel right, like what, if you give me a, like a peel back the layer, what
obsessive, nonstop, frightening thoughts, constantly worrying.
Thoughts of what?
Oh, you name it. Anything that would, I could read a current event, you know, the you know, climate change and the hurricanes going on. I could read a story in the newspaper and it would sit in my mind for weeks and paralyze me. And it made it very difficult to do my work. Physically, I felt extremely tight and uncomfortable. I got to the point early on in my career in New Orleans as a scouting assistant and as a as an area scout, where I'd wake up in the morning kind of scared that, you know, can I get through this day and do all this work? Just the watching all the film, all the typing, like, can I handle this? And then once that fear sets in, now you're just in this constant neurosis and worrying about home all the time, worrying about my dad, worrying about my brother. I can't explain it any other way, Doug, than it was nonstop. And I really knew that at some point I was going to need to find a way to change things, because there's no way I'm going to be able to continue to live like this. And I think anyone around me, you know, I just did a really good job of portraying that I was okay, that I was doing okay, and that things were all right. And as long as I had a job in the NFL and I was employed and, you know, people thought that was really cool and that I was doing okay, that's just how I existed and survived for several years.
So when did you medicate yourself?
So I mental health brought me to my knees when I was 31 years old. That's probably how, not probably, we won the Super Bowl in 2009, the very next year. What would happen, Doug, is every summer we'd get these 3 months off and I would make all these changes and convince myself this next year I'm going to feel better mentally and physically. I would acupuncture, new massage, new trainer, new diet, whatever I could read that could help me feel better mentally and physically, I would try it. And that's what I would be obsessed with. And I remember same pattern, same routine. I get on the road. It's my very first week on the road. I'm 30 years old. I'm in Oklahoma, and I have to drive out to West Texas. This is on school calls, you know, in August, so training camp for college football. And I remember being on that drive out to West Texas and feeling that same pain again in my lower back and my hip. Same racing thoughts in my head over and over again. This is like day one. And I had my first real full panic attack when I was at West Texas University the very next day. I remember interviewing a coach, asking him about one of the players, very standard interview. And I remember he was talking and all I could see his face was his mouth moving, but I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I couldn't make out what he was saying. And I knew the trainer at West Texas really well, Seth. And I went downstairs and I told him, I said, hey, I don't feel right. Something's going on. They took me to like the actual nurse's office. They tested my blood pressure. They gave me like a granola bar to eat, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I went out to the practice field and didn't feel right at all. But told him I was okay, obviously. And I end up leaving and I drove from West Texas to Lubbock. And as soon as I got to Lubbock, Texas, I drove straight to the hospital. I checked myself in and said, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I can't go another day living like this. I don't know if it's my heart. I don't know what it is. And they thought I might be having like some kind of heart condition. So they rushed me to the back. And I spent 8 hours in that emergency room that night. Probably no more than that. It was probably 10 or 12, and went through a battery of tests, all kinds of tests. And doctor came to my bed at 2 a.m. in the morning. And he looked at me and he said, I got good news and I got bad news. And he said, the good news is you're perfectly healthy. He's like, the bad news is you need a lot of help. You need somebody to talk to, because there's a lot of stuff that is causing this stress and anxiety. Has anybody ever told you about the anxiety? And I said, no, I've always felt like this. I've gotten to the point where I can't deal with it anymore. And that doctor looked at me and said, you need to call the New Orleans Saints and tell them you're going to need, you know, 4 to 6 weeks off of work. This is what I'm recommending for you. Go back to Dallas, because that's where my home base was. Find a doctor and find a therapist. And you need to get this under wraps, because it's just going to get worse if you don't start talking and you don't start getting some therapy. And he said, I'm going to give you 2 prescriptions. And this is just for these next 4 to 6 weeks. This is just a crutch until you get the help that you need. And he gave me a prescription of Klonopin for my anxiety. And he gave me a prescription of Norco for my all the pain that I was having in my low back and my hip when I was driving. And never had taken Klonopin before. Obviously, I had exposure to pain pills in the past. And he told me, when I go back to the hotel, drive back to Dallas when you wake up, and start getting some help. And I drove to the hotel, got the prescriptions filled in the morning, took a Klonopin and took the Norco. And within 30 minutes, never felt better in my life. Drove to Lubbock, did the school call, worked for 8 hours, felt amazing. Drove back to Dallas, didn't say a word to anybody at the Saints. Didn't look for help. I just looked for a doctor that would prescribe me that medication. And for the next 18 months, Doug, it was the most clear, the most serene, the most peaceful I'd ever felt. I was very open to people about what I had found. And these are the medications I was taking. And this has really helped me, to my wife, to my dad, to the people, you know, that worked close to me. I didn't hide anything from anyone. And I was of the impression that I was cured, that my issues and all this stress and all this anxiety was done. And for the next 18 months, it was, you know, I got promoted at work. I remember thinking, like, all these things that were holding me back in my life are now over. And then it got to this point where what they were prescribing wasn't meeting, like, the way I needed to feel every day. And I went into the doctor's office and I talked to the doctor in Dallas and said, you know, hey, I need more. Like, it's not, I don't feel the same as I did when I first started taking it. And she was like, no, you need to start taking less. And this is where, kind of for me, I instead of really bearing down and reaching out for help, I went off on my own and I started buying, you know, prescription pain pills on the street. And
how do you do it?
Just through friends, through, you know, talking to people at the gym.
But like, how? Like, I mean, I've been to 100 gyms. No one's ever gone like, hey man, like, how do you know somebody might be the hookup?
Oh, I mean, to the very first person I bought them from, you know, was someone that was in Dallas that we talked about it openly, you know, at the gym, because I was using the Norco for several months prior to ever, like, really buying them illegally or, like, buying them off the street. I had some friends that in Jacksonville that I knew used them. You know, I knew enough people that had connection to them. And that's when I started buying them. And that's when my life really started to take a turn for the worse. And
like what,
you know, I was a functioning addict, you know, from 31 years old until May of 2017, you know, for about 7-8 years there, where my life became, how do I make sure I have enough medication to function through the day? And that's all my life was. I isolated, I separated from all my friends. You know, I was married, and obviously, you know, she knew something was up. I hid it from her how serious it was. And that's what my life became, just a survival mode, like making sure I have enough medication to feel okay and make sure I can get my job done. That was the bottom line. Like, I disassociated from a lot of friends. And through all of this, you know, was a promotion to become the personnel director with the Bears.
All right, that's it for Josh Lucas Part 2. We'll drop Part 3 very, very soon. A reminder, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, 3 to 5 Eastern. We also have an hour pod on that. So just type in Doug Gottlieb, and if you like this stuff, if you like this content, there's a lot more of it. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is Obel.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.